What to do with your feelings. Feelings are only for one thing, being felt. That seems rather obvious, but I grew up and continue to know people who do their best to do absolutely anything other than feel their emotions. They try to judge, bemoan, and suppress them. Or they speak continually about what they should and shouldn't feel, rather than actually about feeling the feelings they really have. They apologize for having them. They deny having them. They analyze, explain, and label them. They drown them in shame. There are any number of approaches for trying to do something other than feeling the feelings. I decided back in the day that I was doing something rather foolish. I was trying to plan my life as if I had full control over what I did or did not feel. Now, to this day, I believe one can choose whether or not to indulge manageable feelings. But undeniably, strong laughter and tears and rage are unmistakable facts we can't logic or self-control away. And they happen to all of us if we're healthy. That's part of what it means to be human. Whether or not they spring up isn't something we can actually control. When you get too much emotional energy building up from within, it will get out, some way or other. And we all build up payloads of emotional energy just by living our lives. There are healthy ways and unhealthy ways for it to get out, but it's getting out. Some people have feelings that explode and burst out. Others have feelings that flow out steadily. And still others lock it all down ironclad, but they leak. They walk around secure in the notion that their feelings are under lock and key, yet they're leaving an oily trail after them everywhere they go. They will swear that when they are angry, no one suspects a thing. This isn't, however, true. It just isn't. There are always people who know, and the feeling is real, and it is affecting everything. Real things affect everything else. Real things even affect things that aren't, and vice versa. Feelings are facts. They exist. They have causes and effects like anything else. The choice is how to handle them, not whether or not to deal with them. They are. They need to be dealt with. My whole life, I have known Christian people who simply can't be known as emotional entities. Often, they have some pretty ironclad personas they can't drop, social masks. Some of them aren't even really talking in their real voices when talking to others. Some have fake FM radio voices, while others have jokey clownish personas. They're kind of playing a character, which character is meant to block a clear view of, not to put too fine a point on it, them. It's a stereotype that men supposedly can't talk about their feelings. Most men I know can, and we do. Women are not, I do not believe, better at understanding feelings. I think they are just better at understanding women's feelings, naturally. There are, however, some people of both genders who are extreme cases. Men whose feelings are screamingly obvious to everyone around, but who can't admit to or deal with a single one. This is not, I feel, functional or recommended, but we saw and still see a lot of it round these parts. My sister says,
feeling an emotion doesn't trap us in it. Breathing and accepting a feeling as mine lets me face and free myself.
About how we carried on as to our feelings growing up brethren and how our parents tend to respond to us today, she says,
there's no logic in it. Everyone sounds like robots. This is a sign that feelings are buried. Rebuking is not a feeling. Neither is anger, for the most part.
Almost every time someone is experiencing their feelings as anger, there is some deeper feeling, betrayal, sorrow, fear, helplessness, shame, under it, pretending not to be there. I've lived in Canada my whole life. The people of the Bible were Mediterranean folk. In my 20s, I worked at the high-tech telecommunications firm Nortel Networks for several years. While I was there, I worked with and met a large number of people from the Middle East. I concluded that they often are, to generalize wildly, much more hot-tempered, quicker to take offense, quicker to smile, more direct, more apt to use touch to communicate, more apt to weep, funnier, and altogether far more likely to wear their feelings on their sleeve. When compared to many of us Canadian folks, that is, with our much younger cultural heritage and the unthinking vestiges of Victorian repression still tangled around our ankles like underpants whose elastic has broken. I worked with a lot of people from Asian countries, too. I found that, generally, they were far more guarded, impassive, and reserved, even, than we European-descended folk. And I got to watch the social interaction go on between white people, African people, Mediterranean people, and Asian people, among all types of people who were, to varying degrees, representative of cultural subgroups which only a fool would suggest do not leave some kind of a mark in a child's formative years. It was complex. It made me think a lot. Made it hard not to generalize about cultures, and impossible to apply generalizations to individuals, because individuals can grow outward from their roots a great deal, but knowing where those roots are planted does seem relevant. My roots are in the Ottawa Valley, where we apologize for getting emotional, and getting emotional pretty much only means displaying an indication of sorrow. Ottawa Valley Feelings. My dad has always acted like a typical rural Ottawa Valley guy, only more so. Emotions weren't really real, like planks, wrenches, carburetors, and bales of hay were. Emotions were kind of imaginary. Feelings were things women were worse at controlling than men. He certainly reflexively denied any emotion he was ever accused of having. In fact, when he felt much of anything, he'd say mom was feeling it, like a child farting and trying to blame it on the dog. Oh, your mother's very upset. Oh, your mother's sad today. Oh, your mother's very tired. I teach a lot of very decent, good-hearted Ottawa Valley teenage boys today who are not a whit different from my father in terms of any of this. Country folk. They know how to castrate a pig or clean a shotgun, how to field dress a moose, how to clean mud out of their rads. A rule of thumb is that any male person in any of my classes who is wearing more than one item of camo clothing is likely going to approach emotionality much like my dad. All the tired old women are crazy, always wanting to talk about their feelings humor from generations previous is going to hit home just as strongly with these guys as it did with people 60 years earlier. Some of them still think Archie Bunker is pretty cool and worry that if they have genuine human feelings, this will mean they are gay. They don't even bother saying, "I'm not racist, but," before they give you their worldview. And they don't hate other races, they just know even less about them than their grandpa does. And knowing one black person doesn't mean you have a broad understanding of and comfort with black people. It just means you know Tyler, and you have no problem with Tyler. Tyler's one of us. He's really not a bad guy, not like those other ones. These guys think race riots in the American South are over slavery, which they believe is still going on. Slavery, or segregation, or something else they don't know the word for. Doesn't matter, racism, segregation, slavery, black people and stuff. In our house, 30 years before any of these lads were born, anytime my father was talking about someone else's feelings, mood, or difficulties, it didn't take you long to realize that he'd always and only been talking about himself, projecting his own feelings onto others rather than feeling and knowing them. For example, if he was angry, he'd interpret the other people around him as angry and ask why they were angry. If he was sad, he'd try to comfort someone nearby and would tell them to cheer up. Sometimes the dog was sad and needed to be comforted. In the 20th century, I'm told, we suffered through two world wars and a Great Depression. I am also told that many people who went through that, including people who'd served in the wars, or who'd been in POW camps or even survived the Holocaust or were nurses, were generally known for refusing or being unable to talk about any of it. I am also told that their children sometimes suffered as a result. It wasn't until the 60s and 70s that the idea of sharing your feelings really took off. It went in admittedly flaky directions then, but it was certainly the other side of that taciturn coin. From the poetry and songs to the books and t-shirts, it was time to talk about me and how I was feeling. Growing up, I had to deal with people from both sides of that, all right? They both used the word just in very interesting ways. "Why can't you just spit it out?" they'd say to a person who was unable to share something. "Why can't you just live your life and just stop feeling sorry for yourself and bothering other people with your problems?" they'd say to a person who could. One thing I decided back in the day, we were as much heart as we were head. We're supposed to be, anyway. There was meant to be a balance. Head wasn't supposed to extinguish heart and rule supreme over it. Feelings weren't supposed to quench all thought all the time. When we tried to be mainly one or the other, this revealed much about us. Mostly it revealed what we couldn't deal with comfortably because growth in that area was required, and the lack of which caused trouble for everyone around us. I learned about being positive and negative from my dad. Here's my father being negative about someone. "Well, apparently Mary's a bit, you know." And here my dad is being positive. Well, I've got no problem with Steve. I don't dislike him at all. He's not a bad guy. He never hurt anyone. A double negative made a positive. You had to know Dad to get what he was being, and even if you correctly interpreted the emotional response, he was never going to discuss the matter fully. He would be extremely unlikely to ever say outright what Mary was a bit exactly. He was used to vague allegations and doubt. He suffered them his whole church career. He was uncomfortable with conflict. His family had that habit of, if they accused someone of something, it was almost never to the face, and if it was, they would then flee the conversation right after having tossed their emotional bomb. End of discussion, they would declare on the way to the room or house, just like they'd actually been participating in one of those. They didn't feel safe having discussions. After all, their parents had had those, and they ended up divorced, and the path to it was messy. My dad's three brothers, too, had many discussions with their wives and ended up divorced as well. Discussions had gone very, very awry in their house growing up. But discussions didn't go awry in our house. It just upset Dad when I tried to have them. I called it a discussion if we were going to talk about something because we didn't seem to already agree. My father called that a fight and said he didn't want to fight, so just shut up, end of discussion. Why cause trouble? People never agreed, and fighting was best avoided, so shut up. At the other end of the emotional spectrum, my dad was never going to be more positive than having no problem with Steve either, than Steve not being a bad guy, than his new car being not bad, I guess. And that was my heritage. My ability to be positive was learned at his feet. There was nature and nurture behind that, pushing me to get stuck there too for my whole life. And one of the weird things I learned at school was to back up my points and stand by them. This was seen as unnatural and perverse by many in my experience of Christians, but I did it all the time. And sticking to my main point and refusing to be drawn off into side issues and personal attacks. That last trick, along with being direct, was seen as cheating in many circles. Also, many, many people thought that being passive-aggressive... Wow, I sure wish my understanding of the world was as simple and unburdened with facts as yours clearly is, but then you're Canadian. Can't really expect much different from you, I guess. No worries, I don't mind a bit. Would you like some tea? I have some lovely tea. You really must try some. I hear your kind love tea. Known for it. Sad, really. Try not to rape anyone while drinking it now, okay? Was, of course, morally superior to being aggressive. Stop insulting me, now, or I'll hit you with this. My experience in Christian circles exposed me to a whole lot of passive-aggressiveness, stealth nasty, and positivity expressed through sarcastic serious comments like, nice shirt there, buddy. Jokingly said as if insulting, but if you knew the person, you were supposed to be able to tell that the snark was faux snark. The snark was there to cover the awkwardness of being fond or accepting, of having given a compliment. You just pretended that you hadn't, disguised it as an insult. Nice haircut there. In the circles I moved in, directness of the kind that said, I've got a problem with your continually telling people I'm gay when you know very well I'm not, was taken as eccentric, socially awkward, and unacceptable, as reaching for the tactical nuclear weapons. I had to get over that, and I did. I got very direct, and it scared people, tipped the scales way too much my way, stripped a lot of would-be attackers of a whole lot of their weapons. I became someone who calmly, coldly even, directly, bluntly expressed objections and disagreement. If I had negative feelings, I didn't hold them in. And although I certainly can't recommend being known only for blunt negativity, I equally cannot recommend snark, denial, sneering, or evasiveness. Or indulging in passive aggressiveness so as to toss out some negativity while maintaining deniability. But then people like you will probably do whatever you want, and we all know what you're like. Sad, really. But it's okay. It's okay with me. I don't mind a bit. Informing God of negative feelings. One thing I had to learn for some reason was to tell God my feelings, even if I didn't think they were good and proper ones. Especially then. No hiding from him like Adam had tried to do. I knew Adam was being silly, but did I know better? Of course, I believed that he would know if my feelings weren't what he wanted, but still there was an odd reticence as to simply dealing with the reality of what they were, having a discussion about them with him. As I've said, I think a lot of people, when they reject the appropriateness or expedience of an emotional reaction, simply try to not feel it, admit it, or accept it. Maybe they're hoping that then it will just go away somehow, and that it will not simply join the growing shadow self they have been fostering in there. In my experience, if you wanted an undesirable feeling to burn itself out or go away, the fastest way to do that quite often was to start by admitting that it was a real thing. Hiding from it made it grow somehow. It worked that way when avoiding talking about it with God. I remember the first time I stopped trying not to be angry with how God, it looked to me, was dealing with my month. I simply told him that, although of course he was always right about everything, that I was angry with him that month, that I was frustrated and confused and put out with God, that I knew that this was foolish, but that it was the reality right then, that month, that I wasn't any more spiritual or mature than that, that this was the fact of the matter. It worked out really well, honest. It brought us closer. It was open and real. It made me not be angry anymore very soon after I discussed it. It's a cliche, but I found that when I denied the true nature of what my feelings were, I lied to myself and made decisions and went through my day under false pretenses. And that was not a recipe for success, I learned. You don't have to indulge your feelings, but it does help to admit them, I found. It took the power out of emotional facts like fear, jealousy, lust, shame, and anger to accept that they were real, even if they really weren't helping. In church settings, I was much more used to people who never discussed feelings without bringing the word should or shouldn't into the discussion. I noticed that should allowed them to always be talking about imaginary, ideal emotional states. How do you feel about this? Well, I suppose I should be happy, so I guess I am. This didn't seem to help anything at all. They mostly were shifting their focus off the actual so as to be able to discuss the amazing super-Christian. What a great hero he was. Did everything he should. I decided, after some thought about the wildly popular, endlessly discussed fictional character super-Christian, that is absolutely Trump's should, when one was trying to deal in what was actual anyway. I felt that we don't fix the less than ideal by trying really hard not to admit to it or think about it. Once Carol left her much more cultish than ours exclusive brethren group, she said,
I feel everything more now. Ergo, if it's shame that's hitting, then it can sometimes be a bit crippling. But my shame or whatever emotion is mine now, not offloaded because of some silly religion someone else dreamed up and used to control me.